My name is Heidi Born, if we haven't met. And if we have met, I'm so happy to be here and to see all of you again. It's such a delight. We started a minute late because I've been gone for a few days. I've just come back from teaching a retreat, and I was getting everything set up here on my desk, and I realized that my bell was in the car, but more importantly, I left the Buddha in the car. And I thought, that's actually a pretty funny line. The Buddha is in the car, but the Buddha is in the heart, right? So I ran out to the car, got my bell, got the little Buddha statue, because I feel more accompanied when I have my stuff. Do we all feel accompanied, you know, when we have our stuff? And our practice is to actually be able to know that the Buddha is here and the stuff really doesn't matter. But, you know, we're creatures of habit and ritual. And so I'm glad I got my bell. Buddha's not in the cold car. And here we are. If we haven't met before, again, my name is Heidi, and I have been in this practice for a long time, sharing this, teaching this class with Sylvia and Donald for a while now, and it is always a pleasure to be here with you. I am calling in today from a little town about 300 miles north of San Francisco on the coast in the Redwoods, McKinleyville, California, which is the territory of the Wiat. So take a look around and let's welcome each other. Let's say hello. If you can turn your video on, turn your video on so we can at least see you for a short time. Because it's such a pleasure to see each other's faces, to take each other in. You know, you can even lean in a little bit so you can see well and be seen. Thank you for doing this. It's just good to be here. Really, really lovely. So, how our morning will work today is we'll start with a meditation, and then I'll offer a talk. And then we'll have another meditation, have time for group discussion. And that's about how it's going to go. Is there anybody here today for whom this is your very first time at Spirit Rock? Jackie, looks like, thank you for coming. Welcome. Do you want to unmute and tell us where you are geographically? Let's see, we'll get you unmuted in a second. Carlita will help us do that, unless she's off figuring out her lighting. Okay, we'll come back, but I do want...
Nope.
Can we unmute Jackie, please?
Yeah, Jackie, there you go. There she is.
I'm calling in from Walla Walla, Washington.
Great. Is it snowy?
It snowed last night.
Oh, beautiful. Look at that. Very nice. Good.
Slowly melting.
I'm glad you've got some snow. Good. Well, welcome, Jackie. Anybody else for whom this is the first time at Spirit Rock? Okay, well, welcome back, everybody. I am very delighted that we're here. So we'll begin by moving into a meditation. Please find a posture that feels just right for you in your body. Whether you're seated or standing, you may even be reclining. Take a breath, maybe lift the shoulders towards the ears on an inhale, and on an exhale, let the shoulders gently drop. The shoulder blades sliding down the back a little bit. The heart opens a bit. See if you can tuck the chin just a little bit. It tends to open the back of the neck some. Getting a sense of your posture. The places the body is touching, whatever it's touching, the furniture or the floor. all those external places, even the places where the body is touching itself on the outside, maybe the insides of the upper arms gracing the sides of the torso. Maybe the hands are touching each other, or the forearms resting in the lap. Maybe you even notice the touch of your hair on your head or face. If your eyes are closed, noticing the touch of the eyelids, the sense of the lips touching. All those places where the sense of touch is present. And then moving the awareness to the inside of the body. And imagining, picturing your lungs and heart, the stomach and intestines, kidneys, all the organs on the inside. Visualizing them. Maybe visualizing the brain, the brain stem, and how that moves down the spine to the spinal cord, all the way down to its base, the vertebra. All of those nerves, the spinal nerves coming out of the spinal column through the vertebrae and out into the body to innervate everything, muscles, tissues, organs. Even getting a sense of all the fluids in the body, blood and lymph, waste product. Becoming aware of the muscles just by imagining, just by thinking about them. Muscles throughout the body, large and small. And then there are the tendons and the ligaments that connect the muscles to the bones. This whole amazing, spectacular body, connected and interconnected, functioning exactly as it is functioning right now. Awareness of this body internally and externally. Becoming aware of the breathing, the inhale and the exhale. And there's a little space in between the inhale and the exhale before the next breath. Just breathe and know you're breathing. The physical experience of breathing, being aware of that. And maybe you even sense the air coming into the nostrils up through the nasal passages, down the back of the throat, and into the lungs. And maybe you sense the expansion and contraction of the lungs as they fill and empty. And how this oxygen that you breathe in and that it fills the lungs all the way out through the lobes of the lungs and the tissues, all the way out to the tiny little sacs called alveoli at the ends, the outer perimeter of the lobes of the lungs where the oxygen is exchanged and it goes into the bloodstream and then it eventually gets into the heart and through the kidneys. This miraculously connected and interconnected body in all of its systems. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath. And in this awareness of this physical being that we are, and also energetic being, by bringing some attention to this aliveness, there's a settledness that can come. Just being here with being alive. We clear a space to begin again, over and over again. We'll sit quietly for a bit. Choose where it makes most sense for you to rest your awareness, be it the breath, the body, or another practice that you have. And stay there, gently, with some space around it. When the mind goes somewhere else, come back. Sense the clearing of the space and begin again. Let's sit quietly. Softening anywhere that might be constricted or holding in the body, clearing a space around that area, any amount that works for you. Now bringing some awareness to the space of the heart. And let's bring in some of the heart practices as we begin our time together today. When we clear a space and begin from the beginning, beginning again, we train. We train in leading with the heart. So staying with your meditation. Maybe place a hand on the heart if that's helpful to you, maybe both hands. Imagine breathing in and out of the heart space, in from every direction, back out into every direction, this heart's breath. And sweeping through your whole being with metta. Imagine breathing in loving kindness, breathing out loving kindness, the wish for yourself and others to be well. Let that flow in and out of the heart and down through the body. Metta, often thought of as the way the heart loves. And then with karuna, compassion. The way we train in meeting difficulty with kindness. Letting compassion flow through you. Inviting the heart to respond. And mudita, appreciative joy, being able to rejoice in somebody else's joy, happiness, good fortune. The vicarious hit we get from touching someone else's joy. Let that flow through your own body. With mudita, the heart delights. And then touching into the steadiness that's already here from sitting still these last minutes, the equanimity. The willingness to be right here, to wait and see with clarity and balance. How the heart allows, doesn't push away, doesn't grab on. The heart says, this is how it is. The heart loves, responds, delights, and allows. Letting these Brahma Viharas flow through you as you breathe. Good morning, everybody. You know, when we have the opportunity to begin any kind of time of practice with settling, arriving, and stilling, it's a good idea to do it. And I just wonder, I imagine that right now you might feel a little bit differently than you felt a half an hour ago when we got here. I hope just a little settled, a little more here. I do. You know, all of the stuff that was before is before, and I'm just here. So it's often said, well, I'll just put it this way. Have you ever noticed that when you listen, you come to Sangha and you come to practice and you hear Dharma talks, that in one way or another, they all say the same thing? That over and over again, there's an essence of a Dharma talk that is repeated in one way or another throughout the teachings. And I remember somebody once said to me, Heidi, you always say the same thing. Are you ever going to say anything different? And this was in an in-person class. And she said, I actually really love it. I'm not being critical, but I do want to say that it sounds like it's always the same. And it is in large measure, you know, and we have different ways of talking about the Dharma and experiencing the Dharma. But, you know, I think there's a reason why the Buddha said the Dharma is good in the beginning and in the middle and in the end, because it's reliable and it really is a refuge. So I want to begin again. You know, this idea of we're clearing a space, we clear a space by showing up for practice. And we begin over and over and over again, coming back into the body, into the breath, into the heart. So here's a little story that I want to read to you. It's called Autobiography in Five Chapters by Portia Nelson. Chapter one, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk, and I fall in. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault, and it takes forever to find a way out. Chapter two. I walk down the same street, and there's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it, and I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in this same place, but it isn't my fault, and it takes a long time to get out. Chapter three. I walk down the same street, and there's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit, but my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault, and I get out immediately. Chapter four. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter five. I walk down a different street. So, I love this story. I love coming back to it over and over again because I think this is what we're talking about in the Dharma, are these repetitive cycles that we get tripped up on. And oftentimes we don't even know the hole in the sidewalk is there until we fall in. And this is a practice of falling down and getting up and falling down and getting up. And employing that beautiful Zen teaching that says when you fall down on the ground, it's the ground that helps you up. If we don't fall in the hole and know we're in a hole, we're not going to learn anything. We're just going to keep doing it. And this is why the Dharma is such a refuge, because it's here, it holds us, it's pretty timeless, and we can keep learning and learning and learning. I read this story years ago at, it was actually a training for law enforcement professionals. And at the end of this, I read the story, and then at the break, somebody came up to me and said, you know, I work for the city, and why don't you just fix the hole? Why do you have to keep doing, just fix the hole? And it wouldn't keep happening. So maybe that's what we're doing. Instead of walking down this different street, I mean, it's all metaphorical, right? Instead of walking down a different street, I think that the hole is what we're learning in the Dharma over and over again, what we're learning in the Dharma. So when we gather in Sangha week after week, after week, do you ever think about what do I hope for? This is such a regular part of my life, every Wednesday morning, or whatever sangha you continually connect with. Does it help to connect to your own intentions, to each other, to your own heart? I think so. And maybe for a moment, think back to your first times in Sangha. How, for some, maybe it was so long ago you can't remember. Maybe for some, it was last week. Or today is the first experience of being in Sangha. There's something there that draws you over and over and over again. And so each time we show up is the chance to discover and rediscover, to align and realign with our hearts, our intentions, to know, I need this. This is good. It's like a good meal, a good friend, a good rest. It's not always comfortable, but it is reliable, isn't it? It is a refuge. So that in feeling of you might hear the same talk over and over again, or the same point over and over again. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but oftentimes it's how we hear it. Have you ever had the experience of, oh, I've heard that so many times, but this time it went in? Or I've heard that so many times and I heard something else in it this time. I know I've had that experience. One thing I'll share about that. You've probably heard the expression that's a meditation instruction to rest in awareness. Have you ever heard that? Rest in awareness. Well, that went by me for a long time because it just felt like, I don't know, a saying, a Dharma adage, rest in awareness. And over time, when I started being more and more aware of awareness itself, this bigger space of knowing, of experiencing my life, whether it's literally through the senses, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, thinking, or just the sitting quietly and being in a more open, relaxed space and saying, oh, I think this is this bigger space of awareness. Can I stop trying to figure stuff out? Can I just rest here? Just relax, just be here. When I realized rest and awareness was an instruction, it was a very specific instruction. So, that's one of those that for me, I needed to hear so many times until something shifted in me. And now I use that all the time for myself. And when I offer it to you, take it that way of simply rest in the awareness of being right here. And it's so freeing to not have to do anything. I mean, yes, we settle through the breath, through the body. That's all a way of grounding, having a place to settle the awareness in order for the chatter to get a little quieter, to slow it all down. And you might think of it as, there's a great metaphor to think about with getting momentum in meditation and settling is that it's quite like riding a bike. If you think about you get on a bike and you pedal, 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 you're doing that to get balance and momentum. And then at some point, the balance and momentum is there and you can coast. That's the resting in the awareness. And then when it gets wobbly, when the bike gets wobbly, you have to pedal again to get your balance back. So you might focus on a sensation, you might focus on the breath, whatever it is that keeps you steady, you do that until your steadiness is established. And then you rest in the awareness of that. Are you with me? It's actually a really great metaphor that helped me get to that understanding of, oh, that's an instruction. That's how I can do it. So you might think about what are those teachings or instructions where you feel like you get it a little deeper, and it's really okay that you heard it for the 8 millionth time. It's really okay because the Dharma is good in the middle and in the beginning and in the end, whatever order you want to say that in. And what I think that we find in coming back again and again and again is that, that old phrase, no mud, no lotus. We have to learn to be present with all the stuff inside of us, and we work it and work it. And then we get to these moments, these aha moments of deeper and deeper understanding. Thich Nhat Hanh says, make good use of the mud. Exactly. Because we all have our own mud, and mud is often quite fertile. There's a lot going on in mud. So make use of your own mud, being able to understand this overarching teaching that the Buddha gave us, suffering. I teach suffering and the end of suffering. That's the big teaching, and everything else is underneath that. And the suffering is the mud, of course, to make good use of it. There's a story about the cellist Pablo Casals that you might know, that he lived till he was about 97, and he was well into his 90s and still practicing every single day. And somebody said to him, "You're in your 90s. Why? You've been playing all your life. Why are you still practicing every day?" And he said, "Because I think I'm getting a little better. Because I think I'm getting a little better." This is what we do. Same Dharma, different day. Same Dharma, different sit. Because we're deepening our awareness, we're strengthening our capacity to be in our lives. And of course, there's this flow between, well, I mean, lots of things of, I want it like this, I don't want it like that, this is too hard, oh, it's really great. How do we experience impatience and resistance versus how we train in expanding patience, expanding receptivity? And in fact, the word sati, which is often translated as mindfulness, Bhikkhu Anālayo teaches that sati is actually the soft receptivity of mind that is necessary for the mindfulness to arise. And so there are times where I definitely do not feel a sati. How about you? I mean, there are times where the mind is not open and receptive. I had an experience last week. I helped take care of the administration of my elderly parents' affairs, and I needed to deal with one of the things that needed some attention, and I called up, and the person said, "What is your verbal password?" And I said, "What verbal password?" "Well, we can't give you any information unless you have the verbal password." I had no idea that I had ever set up a verbal password or what it was or how I was going to work with this. And I said, "I can give you any other information you want. Who I can I give you any other self-identifying information to prove to you who I am, but I can't give you that password because I really don't know what it is." And they wouldn't do it. I had no sati. It was so far away from me. Soft receptivity of mind at that point, I was getting so clenched. And this thing escalated to where they wanted me to go get something notarized. I mean, it was really hard. And I had to use everything that I have learned in this practice to try to stay clear. Clear, I would say clear. And I chose my words well, but I was very aware of the constriction of my mind. And that was useful because to understand and to know what it feels like to not be receptive, to feel that the anger that was arising, the impatience, it's very functional because then when things opened up, I could feel that and have such a clear experience of what is the difference. And one of the things that I needed to do was in the dealing with this, I was actually literally on my way to teach a retreat, and all this stuff was going on, and I was thinking, I got to show up and be a retreat teacher. And I was so activated, I was so annoyed by this situation that when I got to the center, I said to the manager, "I need a room where I can go and be mad." Is there a room where I can go and be mad? And she said, oh yeah, go over there, no problem, nobody's in there. And you know, that was the moment of receptivity. That was the moment of, okay, I know what is happening in me. I don't want to make a difficult thing more difficult. How can I go work with this in a skillful way? So that's the thing about making good use of the mud, is knowing how to respond even when you're really ticked off, really, really frustrated, to not make it more frustrating, to not make it. I mean, the person I was working with even said, well, I can hear that you're frustrated, which didn't really help, does it? I think this is a little bit more than frustration. I don't know the word. Anyway, so what I'm saying, what the Dharma does is it shows us how we expand and we contract and we expand and we contract, and things happen that are so annoying. But can we know where to go to be mad, to dispel the energy, to not make it more difficult? And then there's that place where it opens up a little bit. And can we come into the importance of beginner's mind, of don't know mind? Like, how can I approach this ridiculous situation that has all of these consequences from a bigger place? What do I not know about this? How can I approach this maybe a little bit differently? And so it all worked out, but then that comes into that word, that Pali word that I've shared before called tatramajjatata. Such a great word. Can we hang out here in the middleness of the swirl that is happening around us? Tatramajjatata. And that is that place of balance, where we can find a little our footing, a little equanimity, where we don't fall in that same hole again. Lots of metaphors. You can use whatever metaphor you want that works for this. Here's a poem I like that I think that helps me see that. It's called Feather at Midday, written by Sister Dang Nyam. She's in Thich Nhat Hanh's order. If I had not stopped to watch a feather flying by, I would not have seen its landing, a tiny, pure white feather. Gently, I blew a soft breath to send it back to the spring. If I'd not looked up to watch the feather gliding over the roof, I would not have seen the crescent moon hanging at midday. What are we missing? How do we pause enough to say, what else here? If I hadn't stopped to watch the feather flying by, I would not have seen its landing, a tiny, pure white feather. And this is, I think, what we come back to over and over again. Notice, notice again. For 20 years, I had a laundromat while I was, of course, in the Dharma at the same time. But as we were doing all this business development and working with our employees and our customers, I always had this question in the back of my mind when there was some bigger decision to be made, which was, what am I not seeing? What am I not seeing here? And I had a business partner, and we had a really great partnership, and that was a question that we would ask each other. Because when you can trust the interaction, or trust the other person, and trust yourself, that you don't have to know it all. It works actually better when we don't know it all, and we can adopt that beginner's mind, don't know mind, that says to somebody else, what am I not seeing? What do you see? And there's so much growth that can come out of that and possibility. But we have to be able to stop and watch and ask the question, what else is here? So back to this theme of beginning again, clearing a space to begin again, that the Dharma offers us such a beautiful way to live. And we hear the same thing many times over differently. I read this piece from Zen Master Hun Jiyu Kennett, who is the founder of the Shasta Abbey and one of the first Western women to be ordained as a Zen master in this country. And I think I read this to you last month when I was here, but I want to read it again and take it apart a little bit because I think it's a very beautiful way of thinking about what is happening with this Dharma practice. She says, if you train thoroughly, your whole lifestyle will have to change. You cannot take anything for granted any longer. Enlightenment will not bring you happiness, but it will bring you complete peace and the ability to live utterly and to be unafraid of life. But the price is that you'll have to change everything you do, and in doing so, you will change everybody else around you, because there's no way you can avoid it. Doing something about yourself also does something about the world, because there's no way you can do something about yourself without having an effect on everyone else around you. This is the main way you deal with the problems of the world. You don't go out to deal with the problems, you go out to deal with yourself. When you've dealt with yourself, other people, when they come up against you, say, "This one is different. I like what I see." And so perhaps 10 or 12 people reverberate off of you, and they start doing something about themselves. And 10 or 12 do it off of each other and each one of those. That's how you cure the world. You don't go out there to cure the world. You go out there to do something about yourself. Isn't that beautiful? Because I think what that says for me is that it's not that we are saying, I don't care about the world. We were totally not saying that. But what we are saying is, I got to start here. I got to start here. So I want to take that apart a little bit. She starts out and she says, if you train thoroughly, your whole lifestyle will have to change. And I think about that. You know, in all of my years in this training, my lifestyle has changed. I can't keep doing the same things that haven't worked. Start finding things that work beautifully and do them. You begin to understand our own suffering and the end of our own suffering, these cycles that we go through and how we are in relationship to that, how choice happens. I mean, we do have a choice. We really can say, well, I don't want my lifestyle to change. Well, and then the Dharma's not doesn't have a way to do its work. Then we get sitting down in meditation, and then we're doing the whole spiritual bypass of just expecting bliss and not dealing with the stuff. But if you train thoroughly, and that's the operative word, your whole lifestyle will have to change. And then she says, you cannot take anything for granted any longer. Have you found that? Right? The truth of impermanence and change. The necessity of this don't know mind. Let's not take anything for granted. Because who knows what's happening? We don't know what's happening tomorrow. We can stay the course. We can keep taking the next wise step. But we can't take anything for granted. Next, enlightenment will not bring you happiness. Ah! But it will bring you complete peace and the ability to live utterly and be unafraid of life. I think that is the intention. To live utterly. Peace versus happiness. Peace, I think of as contentment. We can change that word of happiness, or just broaden it out, define it a little bit as a contentment. Because we can experience a full range of emotions and still be okay in our lives, still be contented. To live utterly, without qualification, completely, absolutely, that's what utterly means. And be afraid, be unafraid excuse me, be unafraid because you understand the consequences of greed, ill will, and confusion. I think that that's hard, to be unafraid of life. I don't think I'm there. But I do want to live utterly, completely present. And fear, I think, is often about the future. And we all know that there's a lot to be frightened about the future. But we can live today, utterly, making good choices, changing our own lifestyles towards the wholesome, towards the skillful. And even though unafraid, because you understand, because we understand the truth of dukkha, that we understand the truth of change, that everything is interconnected, that greed and ill will and confusion are the cause of the suffering, when we know that, it is less scary because we understand how things really work in a practical sense. That's what I love about this practice. It is so practical. And then she says, but the price is that you'll have to change everything you do. Whoa. The price is you'll have to change everything you do. Seeing the ways we cause our own suffering, hopefully we're inspired to stop doing those things. And I think that's why we come back over and over again. We need each other. We need the steadiness of this practice. We need to come back over and over again. And the inspiration is when we feel that inner clench of, uh-oh, I probably shouldn't do that, that we have the courage not to, that we shift. Because we're part of a sangha of everybody else that's practicing doing that too. And so it's a place of support. We come here for support. And then she says, and in doing so, you'll change everybody else around you because there's no way you can avoid it. Doing something about yourself also does something about the world because there's no way you can do something about yourself without having an effect on everyone else around you. Isn't that the truth? I mean, truly, we not only do we have mirror neurons that we pick up on the energy that's around us, but the truth of interconnection and interbeing and the butterfly effect and the ripple effects. And hopefully you've all experienced that when you shift something about yourself, it causes a shift around you. Positive or negative, sideways or up and down, there's still a shift. If you think about the beach, and if you dig a hole in the sand around it is going to shapeshift around that. So every time we change ourselves, we are changing so much that's around us. And then I think that we can have confidence in that, especially when we're training to shift for the good. And that's why we started out with sweeping the Brahmaviharas, sweeping our bodies and hearts and minds with the Brahmaviharas as a reminder of, oh, we start here. We train in this goodness. Pablo Casals said, the greatest musicians are those who use their talent to bring light into the world. The greatest musicians are those who use their talent to bring light into the world. This is what we are doing, and this is not arrogant, it is not conceited, it is not better than all those words, but if we use our practice to bring more light into the world because we're training in a deeper and deeper understanding of the consequences of greed and ill will and delusion, there's a lot of motivation to increase the safety and beauty of our own lives by decreasing the ways in which we may cause harm to ourselves or one another. Are you with me on this? I hope so. Okay. And then she says, this is the main way you deal with the problems of the world. You don't go out to deal with the problems, you go out to deal with yourself. starting right here in this body, in this mind and heart. And that takes us to that fundamental teaching of the Buddha that he said, by protecting myself, I protect others. By protecting others, I protect myself. And you can substitute words in there. By caring for myself, I'm caring for others. Any gesture of kindness, Pema says, Pema Chodron, any gesture of kindness to yourself affects those around you. Is it actually a gesture of kindness for them, and vice versa? And remembering through all of this, this is not a self-improvement project, right? I mean, seriously, you've probably heard that phrase before. It's not starting from a place of, I'm rotten, I have to improve. It's starting from a place of, maybe I'm suffering, and I want to understand this suffering a little bit more so I can shift, love myself more deeply, so I can love others more deeply. That's actually how I relate to the path of the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva who commits oneself to being of benefit for all beings, and it includes oneself. So this is why the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. Why we hear the same things over and over again. We hear it differently on different days. And can we trust the sameness of it? And not to have it be different, because it actually isn't. Can we be grateful that we can do the same thing over and over again and see its benefits? And really see its benefits. So there's another story that goes with this that you've probably heard, that when you feel the complaining coming up, that you want it to be different than it actually is, and you come back to say, this is how it is right now, this is how it is right now, to a place of gratitude, to a place of equanimity. Here's this beautiful story. This comes as a story of gratitude about Zenkei Shibayama. There was a young man who tried many strategies for happiness and realized that his life needed to change, but he didn't know where to start. He heard about a woman who sometimes helped people, and in desperation he visited her. He said, I'm amazingly unhappy, and you are my last chance. I don't ever want somebody to say that to me. I would feel like, oh my God, I don't want to be anybody's last chance. The problem is that I'm selfish and I'm lazy as well, and so I won't be able to follow any discipline you set for me, meditation, yoga, that sort of thing. That's okay, she said. I can give you something that will work. It won't be hard, but you have to promise to actually do it. Well, what is it? No, no, I'll only give it to you if you promise to do it first. He hated this and went away, but he really was desperate and came back. How long do I have to do it for? He said. For a year. And in the end, he said, okay, I'll do it. Tell me what it is you want to do, you want me to do, because I'm just so miserable. She said, it's easy. Truly, it's easy. Whenever someone asks you how you are, you say, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. No matter what, that's what you say. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. That's it? He said, yes, off you go. So he traveled and languished and was just as unhappy as ever. And finally, the year passed and he returned. And he said, well, here I am and I'm just as unhappy as ever. You said this would work, but it hasn't worked, not one little bit. And immediately she said, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. And he began to weep. And he began to laugh. He couldn't believe it. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever, he shouted. I got it. Thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. Can we meet our Dharma practice like that? Again and again and again. And I'll end with this poem that I love. It's called Morning After, by Rosemary Wotola Traumer. Again, the chance to praise the same room, the same floor, the same view, the same tea, the same image in the same mirror, which today is startlingly not the same. Again, the chance to find miracle, the miracle in the leaves that fall, the miracle in the morning sun, the miracle in the willows beside the pond. Again, the chance to fall in love with the same sky, the same field, the same dirt, the same broken world. Again, the chance to show up with these same tired arms and put them to work, the same work as yesterday, which is to learn to lift up, to heal, to carry, to build, to be in the world, to praise the same room, the same floor, the same view, the same tea. So this is what we do when we come back over and over again. The sameness and know it's not the same, to praise it and know it's praiseworthy. It's a practice of path, fruit, fruit, path is the fruition of what we're doing. You know, we're on this path of practice. From wherever you start exactly in that spot. And you start to learn something. You start to learn what happens when you open the mind and heart, or you learn what metta actually might feel like. And so then you come to this place of awareness, which is the fruit. And from that fruit, you say, okay, I can do this. There's a little confidence. And you continue on this path. And then you get to the fruit. Path, fruit, fruit, path. And we keep growing like that. So that's why we come back over and over and over again to the sameness and praise it. Okay, we can either take a break or we can go into our meditation. Anybody have a preference? Break? Okay, 5 minutes. 5 minutes, great, thanks. Okay, I'm glad we're back. Thank you for the nudge for a break. I think that that's helpful. So Carlita, do we have any announcements before we move into our meditation?
Thank you so much, Heidi. Appreciate it. First, I did want to state for anybody who was here last week, I have received several requests to know how Sylvia is doing. I spoke to her Monday. She's doing much, much better. Thank you for your thoughts and your concerns. All is well. She's our trooper. And so lastly, I did want to highlight for those of you who do come consistently and you love hearing from Sylvia, she will be having a 4-part series starting next Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. with Sharon Salzberg. So 4 Thursdays starting January the 18th, and it's going to last for 4 weeks. I will put the information in the chat for you about that, but that will be it on my end. Thanks so much, Heidi.
Thank you. That should be really fun. If you have done that series before or haven't, it is really, really sweet. And the other thing I want to tell you that I have coming up, starting on Monday, January 22nd, is also a 4-part series called Falling in Love with Mother Earth. And I'll be teaching with a very dear friend and colleague of mine. Her name is Ashley Wilson, teaching on the work of Joanna Macy and Thich Nhat Hanh in relationship to engaged Buddhism and eco-dharma. So that's on my website, 4-part series, Mondays at 4 o'clock for an hour and a half if you'd like to join us. Love to have you. And you can even drop in. You don't have to register. You can certainly drop into that. Okay, let's have a sit for a bit. What I would like to do, I'm going to offer you another guided practice on being able to sense different parts of the body. And I think I mentioned last time I was here, we did an extensive body scan, and then we talked at length about what that was like. And I think it's valuable for us to really talk about meditation. We talk about all these other things that we're talking about, the teachings and how they're affecting our lives. And we don't always talk about the meditation itself. And I think that is important to do that. So in this guided practice, this can be done if anybody is living with chronic pain. This is, or even acute pain now, like a, you know, maybe a strained muscle that is really painful. This is a practice that can go in between places that are uncomfortable to places that are comfortable as a way of moving the awareness to different places in the body that gets to that place in the teachings about what else is true. What am I learning here? That thing about I have to change my life. How does suffering work? How does it not work? And we can feel it directly in the body. So I'll offer you this and then we'll talk about it. All right. So please find a posture that feels good in your body or at least comfortable. Again, it would probably be best if you're either seated or reclining. You can do this standing, but I wouldn't recommend walking for this practice today. If you'd like to close the eyes, do that, or have a gentle gaze downward. Just sitting and knowing you're sitting, metaphorically, whatever your posture is, know the posture. Breathe and know you're breathing. Arriving and settling. And maybe for a few rounds of breath cycle, taking this intention practice that Sylvia has given us. On the inhale, may I meet this moment fully. On the exhale, may I meet it as a friend. May I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. Breathing and being right here. Holding just enough awareness in the back of the body to stay attentive and present, and letting the whole front of the body relax. We'll take a few minutes to settle into this quiet, into this stillness. Softening anywhere in the body that would benefit from that, perhaps the brow, loosening the jaw, dropping the shoulders any amount, and relaxing the belly, being here. sensing into the body, and noticing if there is a place in the body that's pretty comfortable. It could be somewhere that's a larger area of the body, maybe the feet, the seat, the hands, the chest, the belly, anywhere at all that you might get that sense of comfort. That there's no problem there. It's really okay. And it can be a very small place. It could be a fingernail, an earlobe, the tips of the elbows or the tip of the nose. Letting yourself explore, scan through the body to the place that's simply comfortable. And then describe to yourself, what is this comfort like? Is there an actual sensation to comfort? Does it have a texture or a size? Maybe a color or a shape? Really getting to know the experience of comfort and ease, of not a problem. And then noticing if there's a place in the body that is uncomfortable. Unpleasant sensation, maybe even literally pain. Or if there's not uncomfortable, another comfortable place in the body, let your awareness go somewhere else in the body. But if it is a place of even slight discomfort, could be cold hands, cold nose, that you perceive as a little uncomfortable, go to that place. And see if you can become aware of the characteristics of this other place without attaching words like unpleasant to it. It's just a place that is different than the other place. Noticing sensation, size or shape, color or texture. Notice what's there. And breathing. And then coming back to the original place that actually is comfortable, where you can rest. Breathing and being there. This place of rest and refuge right inside the body. Now going back to the other place that is different from this place. Once again, noticing its characteristics, and maybe they're a little different. Maybe they've changed a little bit from you when you first visited. Simply noticing. And then coming back to the place of comfort and noticing if it has changed at all, any of its characteristics, size or shape, sensation. Simply notice and hanging out there. Resting right here in that sense of okayness, comfort. And last time back to the place that is different from this in the body. Noticing if it has changed in any way. And then coming back into this place where you can rest, we can breathe easily, that's comfortable in the body, no matter how big or small this space is, just being there, resting in the awareness of this ease, this comfort, of a place of no problem. We'll sit quietly for a bit. And as we continue to rest, that place that is comfortable inside, let it expand, to expand throughout the body, to permeate your entire being in the same way that water, fluids follow the path of least resistance. Can you let this comfort, this ease, this not a problemness flow throughout the body, infusing all your tissues, all your cells, all the way out to the edges of the body, and even beyond. And so you're resting here in a sphere of comfort inside and comfort outside. Any amount is just right. Being here. And when you hear the sound of the bell, beginning to bring yourself back. Welcome back, everybody. I didn't realize, but I had myself muted for a while. I gave you all kinds of instructions on mute. I had muted myself because there was some background noise going on here. So that's how it goes. That is how it goes. But hopefully you got the gist of it. And did you hear the instructions of moving back and forth in the body? Okay, good. That was the point. That was the point. Let's talk with each other. I'd love to know, what was that experience of the meditation like for you? And certainly if you have a comment or a question on anything that I said outside of that, let's have plenty of time to talk with each other. You can raise your hand like this, you can do your Zoom hand, and Carlita will help us along. Looks like Adrian.
Hi.
There you go.
There we go. Well, when you said you were going to do a meditation on pain, my immediate response was, how does she know?
Oh.
And so one of the things that I've been working on with the pain is to go to where there is no pain.
Yeah.
But I've been meditating on space, and space outside, space inside, the same space. I can borrow space from
That's beautiful.
From the outside, because I feel like the pain, it's muscle pain. So I imagine that the space is that space is relaxing the muscle and creating space within the muscle.
Totally.
Then, but I hadn't done this before today, to go between the place that doesn't have pain. I feel it is spacious. And then to be able to lend the place that does have pain, the space from the place that doesn't have pain. So it's an internal borrowing of space from the
that's so cool.
Spacious, non-painful part to the contracted non-space part. So it works.
Did it work?
It worked. It works. I mean, but I think what brought the meditation helped was to know that internally, you can move the space internally from the okay place to the painful place. And it's about, for me, it's about space, having more space where the pain is.
That's such a great image, how we borrow from one part to care for the other part. And metaphorically, you can build on that in lots of ways. But it is, I think, spaciousness is incredibly important, that place of soft receptivity, that because we can get so contracted and pain hurts. So the natural response of the body is to tighten around it, but to make space around it. And the imagery is powerful, isn't it, Adrian? It really is. And to be creative with your own practice like that is really smart. I think it's very effective. And then, let's take that one step further. To borrow from the parts of ourselves that feel okay, to care for the parts of ourselves that might not. I think conceptually, it's a parallel. And this is why I think that what is learned in the literal practice of meditation is so applicable to our everyday lives. And so anybody who wants to borrow that image from Adrian about space and spaciousness, do it. This is what we do together, is we're sharing practice to say, hey, I tried this and it worked. Or I tried this and it didn't work. Maybe it'll work for you. Thank you, Adrian. I really appreciate that. Sylvia. There you go.
Hi, Heidi. I have heard the five chapter that you have mentioned many times before, and until today, it never really resonate with me. So when you were reading this five chapter, I was like, oh, I'm in chapter 3 and 4, this week. It's really like you said, we're coming back to the same over and over again. And every week, every day, you have different insight into it. I'm so thankful that I attend your sessions today, and
Oh,
it's
good.
been incredibly insightful.
So isn't this exactly what we're talking about, that you can hear the same thing over and over again and say, I don't resonate with that. And then something does. And that is this practice of faith, trust, and confidence that the Buddha talked about. You just keep coming back over and over again, and sometimes you just do it. You just take the next step, even though you really don't know why or what for or what it is, but you do it. And part of the practice of this trust and confidence is called borrowed faith. That when we don't have the trust, when you're going, oh, this doesn't resonate, you do it anyway. You borrow the you trust what other people are doing because you're part of the sangha. And then by and by, it worked. It came in today. I'm so glad.
I'm hope one day I can patch the holes
That's
and make
right. We all do, right? Before another hole forms, because that's what it is. Yeah, it's just going to keep going like that. And then as we get more and more skilled, we have more capacity to deal with the holes. Thank you. Thanks,
Thank
Sylvia.
you.
You're welcome. Jane.
Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
Whatever the two people before me said really resonated very strongly. But I also wanted to comment on your part of the meditation at the very end when you said take that which feels comfortable and let it flow through your whole body like water does. And that was just an amazing experience.
Did it work? Did it happen?
Oh my gosh, I just took an area that felt comfortable, and I started with my head, and because water just flows through, and it was just absolutely amazing. I mean, I didn't even have to guide it; it just it went. And I've never
Right.
done that before. And it was sort of like a cleansing
I'm
or
so glad.
energy release. It was very powerful. So I just wanted to thank you for
Oh, you're
that.
so welcome, and use it as much as you want. You know, when you find a practice for everybody that actually it works, do it again. And then if you find a time where it falls flat and it doesn't work, don't worry about it. But it's just another one of those metaphors that can really help bring us into this open space, the non-contentious space of just being. Thank you. I'm so glad. Thank you for telling me. It's great. Thanks. Scott.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to go back to your talk, and I
Please.
really liked the part where you said it's not self-improvement, but I'm suffering and I can love myself more. And I found that really meaningful. And I think I've heard it many times before in different ways, but this time it really resonated. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
And then I had a question. The story you told about, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. I don't know if I missed something. Was it really just about, trying to be more optimistic?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Like, what am I missing here? It's not quite landing. I think that the point of that story is that when we can meet our lives as they are with some clarity, some things we're going to like, some things we're not going to like, a whole lot of things, right? I mean, it's never ever going to be just what we want. But when we come into that awareness of, oh, right, life includes a whole lot of difficulty too. And the practice of gratitude that takes us not to a dismissal of our suffering, but actually to a place of course it's like this. And yet I am very blessed. Thank you very much. I have no complaints is a representative of dukkha is true, and what else is true is also I'm okay. And there's a really funny, poignant YouTube video that James Baer has put together of his mother. It's called Something About the Jewish Mother. If you look up James Baer's on YouTube, it's actually extremely funny and poignant, in which he had a mother who complained all the time. And he said to her, "Mom, what if every single time you complain, you also end it with, and my life is very blessed? Say your complaint, and my life is very blessed." And she actually took it on as a practice, and it changed her. At the end of her life, she was able to get perspective about the difficulties and have it not be the biggest thing, but to actually see, yes, of course that's happening, and I'm okay, and I have the gratitude. And so, yeah, I get it about the story. It's like it needs to be fleshed out a little bit, that we can complain and complain and complain, but the teaching is, if you can say thank you very much, this is how it is, I have no complaints, that is a bigger acceptance of everything that is in life. And it becomes not so much all about us all the time. It's a bigger picture. Does that help, Scott?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank
Check
you.
out that YouTube. It's extremely fun and
Okay.
gets to the point.
Will do. Thanks.
You're welcome. I want to end with a wish for the new year. That is the name of this poem from Megan Falley. Because I cannot wish anyone a year where nothing hard happens, I wish you a year where you meet what is hard with softness, where you know softness is an impeccable strength. I wish you a heart like a neon sign that blinks open 24 hours. I wish you an Advent calendar year. Behind the door of each day, a small gift, a surprise sweetness, an unexpected bliss. I wish you a life like a crowbar, prying your chest open, letting more love in. Thank you, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll be back next week and look forward to seeing you then. We offer up the goodness of our practice and all of our efforts to everyone everywhere, that everyone has enough to eat, has shelter, a welcoming community, all of it, so all of this suffering can be eased. And let's all send Sylvia a bunch of metta so she continues to heal. And I'll see you all next week. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.